I'm Sylvie Legère. I am the co-founder of the Policy Circle. It is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. And the mission of the organization is to inform, equip, and connect women to be impactful citizens. Maybe 2 years ago, some of our members came to us and said, we would love to have a brief to understand the issue of human trafficking because we want to get engaged. So we published a great brief that I invite everyone to review. And I've been part of conversation on the topic. So when Kristen Jackson, who is the CEO of Free Spoke, came to me and said, we'd love to organize an event to really examine the role of big tech in human trafficking, I had no hesitation to host this event, and I hope that you will enjoy the conversation I will be having, and you will leave informed, equipped, and connected to be impactful. I'd love to invite Kristen Jackson to the stage to frame the issue and introduce our panelists. Kristen.
Thank you, Sylvie. I'm so glad you guys all made it today. Like Sylvie said, I am Kristen Jackson. I am one of the co-founders of the Free Spoke search engine, along with Todd Ricketts. And I'm gonna tell you some of the shocking statistics that made us really passionate about being that search engine that doesn't show pornography. A little bit of background, we are a full search engine, and we are fighting for the way the internet was supposed to be. And we see that as full search results, no bias, just full rich search results with privacy, and without pornography. So how do we do that? We label content left and middle, we show all perspectives, we get you to see independent publishers and American-made brands along with everything else. We don't track you, we're not taking your data, so we give you privacy. We aren't knitting together a profile about you so we can manipulate you to click on content so we can make money. That's how big tech operates today. And the third area that we're going to be focusing on tonight is we're pornography free. And we know that's because you're looking for an internet that doesn't feed pornography to your children or support the business models of sex traffickers and child molesters. So what's interesting is when we started this, we had no idea. It was not our plan to be pornography free. But we realized advancements in technology are supposed to be advancing human flourishing, not taking away from it. And we learned these statistics. Online pornography is the third most common form of sex trafficking. That's after illicit massage parlors and escort services. And that's according to data from the National Human Trafficking Hotline. And then we read a New York Times piece, and it was a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who wrote this article entitled "The Children of Pornhub." And in it, he stated, "Google supports the business model of child molesters." And we thought, that's a really hard-hitting line in there. But when you start to dig into it, it's true. Online pornography is a $1 billion industry. And Pepperdine Law Review says that 1 out of 5 pornographic images is of a child. And over half of that is created in the United States. So one more statistic that really hit us. Just last year, in 2023 alone, the National Center on Missing and Exploited Children reported over 36 million cyber tips came into their tip line of child online sexual abuse. And those 36 million tips were accompanied with over 105 million documents and images showing that this abuse existed. So we realized that we couldn't be a part of this problem. We have to be a part of the solution. And with that, I'm excited to introduce our real experts in this space. First, we have Lina Nealon. She is the Vice President at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Come up. We have Brenda Myers-Powell. She is a survivor, a member of the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking, and a founder of Ernestine's Daughter. And we have Jessica Lamb, a survivor and a founder of Atlanta Redemption, Inc., which works with organizations to work with survivors by helping them remove the marks of trafficking. With that, I'll hand it back to Sylvie.
Thank you guys for being here. The way I like to start these conversations is actually with framing the issue and ensuring that we're talking about the same things. Human trafficking encompasses a lot. It encompasses forced labor and forced commercial sexual exploitation. And overall, human trafficking generates about $150 billion globally in profits. And 65% of those profits come from for sexual exploitation. And today our focus is going to be on that. It's going to be on combating and understanding the issue of sexual exploitation. But I'd love to turn to Lena Neeland, Vice President at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, to explain to us what does it all entail, because there's a lot, and I don't want to use the wrong terminology either. So.
Sure. Well, first, I just want to thank you, Sylvie, for hosting this along with FreeSpoke. It's such an honor to be here. I have to say I was a little bit nervous as a born and bred Chicago Southsider coming up this far north, so I'm trying to camouflage a bit. Hope it's working. And such an honor to be here with my co-panelists, especially Brenda Myers Powell has been a mentor and a real leader in the movement to combat sexual abuse and exploitation, so it's an honor to be here with you. So as you said, sexual exploitation really is, has a simple definition for a complex web of harms. And sexual exploitation is basically a person or an entity benefiting from or profiting from the use of somebody else or their image in a sexual manner. So it doesn't always have to be a financial transaction. Using someone and sexually exploiting them could benefit you socially, increase power, and can be a form of benefiting in your own sexual gratification. And unfortunately, there are many types of sexual abuse and exploitation. Child sex abuse material, for example, as Kristen was talking about, it's the more correct term for child pornography, and we're seeing it skyrocket, especially since COVID. For every second that we're here, two images of a child's rape is being uploaded online. Image-based sexual abuse is also a growing form of exploitation that's largely targeting women. You may have been seeing more in the news about deepfake pornography, AI-generated pornography, and it's literally being weaponized against women and girls because AI deepfake pornography has been trained only on women and girls. We're even hearing of teen boys, using this deepfake pornography that you can find on the app stores, on Apple App Store and Google Play, and nudify their classmates and create video images that are so real, Google can't even tell if they're real or not. Sextortion, another type of sexual exploitation that the FBI is warning is on the rise. It's affecting teen boys in particular through Snapchat and Instagram. And then of course, prostitution and sex trafficking. And sex trafficking in particular is taking a person's, an adult or a child's, literally it's a form of slavery, and forcing them to conduct sexual acts within the commercial sex industry. So what does that mean? The commercial sex industry is prostitution, it's strip clubs, it's pornography, as Kristen noted, and it comes in many forms. Sugar dating is something that we're seeing a lot of talk, even in middle schools, of older men preying on younger women, economically disadvantaged women. It's a form of prostitution. So again, a web of complex trauma. Survivors of sexual exploitation often suffer a lot of these forms of trauma, and unfortunately, it is rapidly on the rise. Every single form we're seeing exponentially increase at very disturbing rates, and we have to do something about them. So I'm so grateful that all of you chose to drive through the rain in Chicago traffic to really expose and shine a light, as the title of this panel is called, because it's so difficult to address these issues, but we must. And I hope through this panel you'll recognize it's not happening somewhere outside of the US, in Thailand and Vietnam. It is happening literally probably a few streets over, and is most certainly happening right now to a child in their bedroom who is holding a smartphone. So we want to help you understand this complex web, but then also give you hope and tangible ways to confront it.
So you touched a little bit on the role of technology in facilitating. Let's examine more the role of technology platforms. You're leading some impactful campaigns called the Dirty Dozen. Tell us more about the role of technology.
First of all, just start. My role is to confront mainstream corporations that you and I use and love, we use every day, but that unfortunately are facilitating, enabling, and profiting from sexual abuse and exploitation. And this varies across industries, from the entertainment industry, the hotel industry, financial services, but really where we're seeing the explosion in sexual exploitation, including sex trafficking, is online, and big tech is facilitating this abuse. For example, Instagram literally is a marketplace for sex trafficking. We have had girls show us, primarily young girls of color, but it's not limited, but primarily young girls of color, survivors showing us on their Instagram accounts, in their DMs, men pinging them to purchase them for sex. And this is Facebook and Instagram. Snapchat, I pose as a teen online. I can tell you it is a very scary experience. I'm a mother of four. My oldest is about to turn 14. My youngest is 7. And even having been in this exploitation field for many years, I had no clue what's going on. Snapchat, I would get masturbation videos on an almost daily basis. I would be solicited by grown men for pictures, and this is how predators and where they are going to seek their victims, both adults and children, and then where they buy and sell them, either by obtaining child sex abuse material. A fourth of children on Snapchat have had a sexual interaction with an adult that they don't know through Snapchat, and they obtain these nude images, and then they either sextort them for more nude images, or they post them on Pornhub and X and Reddit, or they, again, sextort them for money. And we have seen cases where children have been accessed on Roblox. Roblox, if you have a child in your life, they probably know and are probably on Roblox, or their friends are on Roblox. It is primarily 16 and under. A fourth of their user base is 10 and under. And they refuse to put on safety settings that they have, but they refuse to default them. And we've had countless situations of predators accessing kids on Roblox. One situation where a predator met the child on Roblox, obtained sexually explicit content on Snapchat, and then actually ended up meeting up with this child, which he posted on X that he was doing, and kidnapping and taking him across state lines. So again, I don't want to sound alarmist or scare people, and I'm also not cherry picking extreme cases. Unfortunately, this is what we're seeing. This is the norm right now for what our kids are experiencing online. And these social media companies can and should be doing more, but they don't, unless they are being pressed by public pressure, by policymakers, and some regulation. They have proven that they either will not or cannot make the changes themselves. And it's time for some more regulations, because they will not regulate themselves.
Yeah, and I think this is timely to be aware of these issues, because there are a lot of legislation being proposed, being discussed. This is where our voice matters to indicate to our representative where we stand on this. But the paradigm needs to change on the internet, where we become the owner of our data, and our privacy is first. Before our data is being used for profits. So you talk about how this crosses cities' borders, and it's happening here, close to us, anywhere. Brenda, you are here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You are a survivor. You're also the founder of a drop-in center called Ernestine's Daughter. What is the landscape of sexual exploitation and trafficking in Chicago?
Thank you so much. It's ridiculous. And I'd like to say that I don't want to make anybody think that we've got a control over things here in Chicago. We do not. Chicago does not have a full service program for women or girls here in Chicago that can help them exit the lifestyle of human trafficking. They don't have a place for girls or women to go to get out of human trafficking. Every place that is fit for a girl or a woman to recover for human trafficking is outside of Illinois. I just want to let you know that. There's only one facility, and it doesn't specialize in services for human trafficking, and it's a drug treatment program in the downtown area, and it accepts them if they have a drug problem. If they don't have a drug problem, there's nowhere for these girls to go. I want to put that in your heads right now. There's no place for these women to go. Chicago has two airports, and they have a large scale tourism. You got everything going on here. Tourism is high, and human trafficking is high. Girls travel here from all states and countries to get this money that's in Chicago, and they get caught up. Traffickers send a lot of girls here, And thanks to Tom Dart, I experienced that in the 10 years that I was working in Cook County Sheriff's Department. I was part of the solution to help girls come through there and get services instead of being locked up. And Tom Dart would have me meet the girls as they arrested them, and we would give them services, and we would put them in a place that they could be safe if they would accept it. And this is how we began to look at the internet through our eyes through in Cook County Jail and saw the harm that they were doing. I've been a part of many bills that have been through, and I've lobbied in Springfield for years. My experience in human trafficking has been for 27 years. I started when I started my recovery right down the street here at 911 West Addison. We have something going on in Chicago called decriminalization. They're trying to decriminalize human trafficking, prostitution. They're trying to put it where it will be okay across the board, and that means for the man and traffickers. We can't let that happen. And the reason that we can't happen is because if we do that, then they will run amok with human trafficking. It will be okay for people to open up brothels. It will be okay for them to open up everything, some massage parlors, and it's like the women will be able to sell freely, but also the pimps and the buyers will be able to roll freely. We're not putting anything in play for protections. We're not putting anything in play that will help these women. I don't want to decriminalize anything like that either. For my daughter, for my son, why would anybody want to decriminalize that? And if you did, would you tell your son or daughter or your neighbor, hey, you know they decriminalize human trafficking, why don't you go down there and sign up for a job? I don't think so. But that's the way our world would turn into if something like that happened. Because it would be legal for a man to approach a woman for prostitution. Now we have a thing called partial decriminalization, where the women don't get arrested for prostitution. They get services and things like that, we hope, because we're working on that. But the people who get paid off prostitution don't get what they want. Do you understand that? There's decriminalization and then there's partial decriminalization. We're trying to keep the laws where the people who are making money off the women and trying to flood our neighborhoods with this type of thing don't win. We can't let this happen. And this is something that they're trying to do right now in Chicago. Listen, I'm gonna tell y'all a secret. I'm 67 years old. I don't know why I don't look it. I'm glad, but I will not stop what I'm doing until two things happen. First, I'm gonna fight this decriminalization. And second, I need a full service place for women here in Chicago because my sisters are dying out there. I've been working for 27 years to just get a full service house where women can come and recover like I did. And I haven't had any help yet. I went and rented an apartment for a drop-in center where girls are coming in now recovering the best way they can, but I need more help. And ladies and gentlemen, if you care, and Lena said, during pandemic, everything shot to the sky. Men were putting their women out in the streets. Women were letting men into their homes that they really didn't know, and they were putting them out in the street. I met women who had bruises, burns, and cuts, where men had abused them because they wanted to put them out on the corner because economics were really bad. They had children in their seats. I had to turn my drop-in center into a place where kids were sleeping on mattresses and bringing them in. It wasn't just the regulars out there. There were women from the suburbs who lost their homes and everything out there on the street. That's what the pandemic did to us.
Brenda, you bring up several points, and especially around decriminalization, becomes harder to prosecute or to find the traffickers. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for Jessica to talk about your work in different capacity to help victims, but also to track down traffickers.
My name is Jessica Lamb. I'm the founder of Atlanta Redemption, Inc. So I live in Georgia, but I am also a survivor. I'm a survivor of commercial exploitation as a minor, as well as in my adult years or young adult years. And I'm now almost 39, and I do look it. But I'm so blessed to be here, and I'm very appreciative for the invite to talk about Atlanta Redemption, Inc. But I also wanted to highlight that there is an artist that is here in Chicago that does the work that we're doing in his shop, and it's outside of the area. It's in Oswego, Illinois, and his name is Chris Baker from Ink 180, and he does cover-ups and removals as well. But when I started my nonprofit, it was in 2017, and I got my cover-up in 2016. I had lived with that on my body from the time I was 16 years old until I was, at the time, married with children. And I felt gross in my body, and I went to go get that covered up, and it was a horrible experience for me. I was not treated very well in the tattoo shop. It was re-traumatizing. I left with a headache, and I thought, I never want to see another survivor from any walk of life have to experience what I just dealt with for 4 hours to get my branding covered up. So you might think, what is a branding? So oftentimes traffickers or abusers will take their women or convince them to go get a mark on their body that will show that they are owned or they're loyal to the game or to the lifestyle. Or sometimes they'll choose to do it themselves because they have that Stockholm syndrome or there's that trauma bond. And so they'll go and get a tattoo to show that they are loyal to the game. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've created a national network of tattoo artists and removal specialists. And we have one almost in every single state. And they dedicate their time and talent to provide a trauma-informed place that is also trauma-sensitive and a place that people can go and be safe and be able to let their guard down if they're comfortable and connect with a tattoo artist that is, like I said, trauma-informed and is trauma-sensitive. And they help them renew the brands that were on their bodies or the self-harm scars that they might have self-harmed, or if there's a gang tattoo and they're having a hard time getting employment. And the recidivism rates are insane because they keep trying to stay, they have to get their money, right? And so they're not able to get employment with a lot of face tattoos. And so we work with some of the top leading removal specialists in the country to be able to remove those tattoos to help them increase their job possibilities when they are coming out of the prison system and going for a second chance. So we've created this program, and I also train in iconography, which is the study of human imagery and tattoos. And so I can study an image and analyze it and figure out what it's tied to, tie it to ads online, and be able to locate victims and possibly tie them to their exploiter. I do that with Atlanta Redemption, Inc., and it's all out of my own personal experience. We also added homeschool, high school diplomas, so if people have dropped out of high school like I had to, they're able to get a full graduation. So like when I got my graduation, I was able to have a cap and gown, senior breakfast. I was in my adult years when I got that, but I needed that because I didn't get that when I was a teenager. And so we're able to provide that as well. And then we help with the counseling on a holistic approach. I'm also a volunteer with an organization called Skull Games. You can Google them, which is skullgames.io. And what we do is we hunt the people that are hurting these women and children and victims. This past weekend, we had over 100 analysts and hunters in one room in Tampa. And we identified over 51 victims, as well as 21 or so, maybe more, the possible trafficker. And we combine those leads, put them together, and we send them to local law enforcement. So we were able to hunt all weekend and be able to identify victims, be able to give them services, and then put the people that are hurting them and oppressing them, holding them accountable for their actions, like she had said. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do on top of being a mom of two small kids and being an art therapist. It's truly a joy. And I remember the first shop I went into to help do a cover up, and I didn't have an organizational name. I had $50 in my pocket. And I knew that I wanted to help this one person. If it would have stopped there, I knew that I had helped that person and it would have been fine. And then overnight it started to expand and I started getting phone calls from all over the state of Georgia. And then it started going outside of the state, and then it's now spread across the country. And then we also have providers like in Canada as well. And so it's just expanded so quickly in almost 7 years. And it's just a blessing to be able to take my own lived experience and sit down with my survivor siblings and be like, you've got this. This isn't the end of the road, that you can thrive and get to where you want to be in life. And you don't have to be stuck living with this. And those scars don't go away. I'm 39. I was exploited as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And walking through hotels sometimes, the smell of the hotel rooms, the looks of the carpet, all of those things, it sits with you. Certain music, certain songs, certain things like just take you back to those moments that you don't want to remember, but unfortunately, they're going to be with me forever, and it's just what I choose to do with that. And what I choose to do with that is to help other people to try to move forward in their life.
Brenda, you were talking about the center that you're creating because the needs of the victim are so unique, right? Mm-hmm. And it also requires a collaboration of so many services, mm-hmm. from health services to mental health to education to help people to rebound and actually really find a new life. And so you want to add?
One of the most horrific things is trauma and different types of trauma. And as she just said, a smell, a song, anything can bring it up. And I'm talking about me, who's been out of the game, as we call it, for 27 years. Do you know that I still am traumatized? I'm traumatized. I don't know how to receive love. And that's a problem in my life, you know what I'm saying? And I'm talking about, I love everybody to pieces, and they generate around me like magnets, you know what I'm saying? But I don't think that I know what love is. For me, as a woman, I'm talking about as a woman, because of the trauma I went through in my life, you know what I'm saying? Because I questioned myself, but I work to give love to people, you understand? But that my work in progress still at my age because of the trauma. That's why I go out and I understand and I hear my girls. I hear their pain, because I'm still there. So when they walk into the drop-in center, it's a setting of peacefulness. I got dream catchers all over there. I got the corner over there with the beauty corner, the makeup corner. I got comfortable couches that make you say, come over here and sit down. I got books. And listen, I got all these books, and I didn't think, girls, they've been taking those books out of it. Not my books, all kinds of great reading books. They just love them. We play board games. We sit up there and talk about stuff. And I got people who volunteer, clinicians, therapists, who come by. We deal with another organization who comes by, because I don't have the budget and the money to give the girls everything they need. I got volunteer people who come twice a month and give my girls massages. We do yoga, meditation. When I come and do an assessment on a girl, it's not the kind of assessment you think it is. Because see, I've been through her mess. My survivors have been through their mess. We talk to them, with them, not at them, while we're filing out their stuff. Because the worst thing you can do to a survivor is she come to my desk and I sit down there.
So sweet.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Mary, you see her next. Now Mary's gonna ask her the same questions I just asked you. She's got to detail all of that happened to her trauma three or four times before she get a sandwich bag and a juice. Or a service? No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I'm not gonna let you sit up there and pull up all your trauma just to get some services. Talk when you feel like it, but let's get you some services now.
And also, I think you have a great way of saying how much healing is needed, mm-hmm. for their voice, for survivors to actually contribute to combating.
And it's an ongoing
thing. And
their
voice matters in terms of defining policies that become effective ways to protect the victims, to also prevent and educate others, and also to prosecute traffickers. I'd love to turn to Lena a little bit to talk about what can we do and what are the legislative measures that are being taken right now to actually define legally how can it be stopped, combated, and reduced to do this, to protect the victims and prosecute the traffickers.
There are laws in place. We do have a federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act that was put in place in 2000. I think it's really important for people to understand that if you are a minor in the United States, if you are a minor in the commercial sex industry, you're by definition a child sex trafficking victim. Children cannot consent, but yet in some states, children who are in prostitution are literally still being convicted. So we have these laws at the federal level and the state level. that often don't actually intersect appropriately, right? And they're not being implemented, and it's very hard to prosecute human trafficking cases. I think in 2023, Department of Justice only prosecuted about 200 cases. Am I right, Brenda? So very hard to prosecute. These are hidden crimes, other forms of sexual exploitation. We have no federal law to fight against deep fake pornography or revenge porn. So if a woman's image is filmed unconsensually or shared unconsensually, or if an image and likeness of your daughter or you is taken and pornography is created, which I can tell you is very traumatic. Really? It might seem like it's not a big deal, but the effects of it are the same physiological effects of being sexually assaulted. We have no federal law for that. Kids Online Safety Act and Earn It are two pieces of legislation that we're really fighting for, broad bipartisan support to hold corporations liable for facilitating sexual abuse and exploitation. Right now, there's a Communications Decency Act that was passed in 1996, many years before many of these platforms even existed, and it was meant to protect kids from online pornography. And through a series of cuts and misinterpretations by courts, corporations, by and large, are not liable for anything that happens on their platform, including sex trafficking, including child sex abuse material. So we have to push for these different laws that address different forms of sexual abuse and exploitation, both at the federal level and at the state's level. And just to add to what Brenda said, one of the things that we work with Brenda and the National Center on Sexual Exploitation works with a broad spectrum of allies, Republican, Democrat. There is a wave of this decriminalization movement, and it is terrifying because what we know from other countries, there has been scores of research in Germany, in Australia, New Zealand, Amsterdam. When you legalize or decriminalize the entire commercial sex industry, so what that means is, like you said, brothels, sex buyers, and pimps are decriminalized, sex trafficking skyrockets. And even Amsterdam, the mayor declared it a failed experiment and started shutting down the red light district because they saw this wave of sex trafficking. Why?
Black market children.
Black market, right.
Children.
They couldn't fill the demand fast enough. And I have to make this point too. Sexual exploitation and sex trafficking is driven by the demand for paid sex. And unfortunately, that is largely men buying sex through prostitution, through pornography. If we want to stem exploitation at the root of it, we have to go after the demand.
Right.
So there are laws and models that we support that would decriminalize those who are in prostitution, who are largely the victims, and keep sex buyers, pimps, and brothel owners accountable. So please do look up these laws. You can go on the National Center on Sexual Exploitation site. We make it very easy to contact policymakers. We outline what these laws do. And then the other thing that I'll just add that we invite you to do, we just released our Dirty Dozen list, which is a yearly campaign, again, calling out mainstream entities for facilitating sexual abuse and exploitation. It's not a top 12 list, but again, it's calling out companies like Apple and Discord and Roblox, Microsoft's GitHub, which is a hub of deepfake pornography. We call them out and we give everybody very easy actions to contact the executives, contact the staff, and demand as users, as shareholders, as customers, that these companies should be doing better. They should have principled policies and practices that protect privacy, but also protect us. It is not a zero-sum game. That is the lie big tech tells us. We can have both. So really urge you to understand the federal policies, your local policies, and legislation that's been introduced, and take action where you can, because it really does make a huge difference. We've seen the success stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like one of the things that you outline also is that it requires a collaboration of law enforcement at all levels, right? From the city, the county, the state, and at the national level, and even internationally. But locally, it requires a lot of coordination from all the law enforcement entities, and also with health services in the state, in the city. And I know, Jessica, you are organizing a conference that is called Rise at and coming up in Atlanta, and that is your goal, right? Is to bring together all of the agents that can help protect the victims, prosecute or identify the traffickers, but also prevent trafficking. So talk a little bit about the conference that you will be hosting in June.
So June 6th and 7th in Peachtree City, Georgia, we're hosting the first survivor-led conference in the state, and it's called RISE Summit. So we're partnering with the Georgia Gang Investigation Association, as well as Peachtree City. We're also bringing in Skull Games to do a Capture the Flag event. That's not the physical Capture the Flag, but we will be like using the tools that you'll learn at the conference to be able to sign up to be a part of a Skull Game, like a miniature condensed one. But it's going to be 2 days, and we're going to be collaborating together. We're going to be working together, putting our minds together, and taking action. So it's not going to be like trafficking 101. It's going to be taking it a step further and how we can work together, even if we're from different nonprofits or different organizations or whatever. We can all come together, work together with law enforcement, cybersecurity techs, and figure out how we can push the needle forward. I'd invite you guys to register. It's on our website. You can just go to the event page and register to attend, and it's going to be at the Crown Plaza in Peachtree City in Georgia.
Did I see that someone from the Cook County Sheriff's Office will be a speaker?
Yes, I have Marion Hatcher. Dr. Marion Hatcher is going to be our keynote, and she will be speaking. She's from Cooks County. Yes.
Yeah. And I think like one of the other actions, Brenda, you talked about
I worked with Marion for 10 years.
Oh, you did?
Yes, Marion and I worked in the same office.
Brenda is also, you've been on the U.S. Advisory Council.
My second term.
On human trafficking.
On the U.S. Advisory Council. I've had the best experience. We leave on the 23rd, go to the border. We just came back from Alaska. We do really good work, and we go to the places that have the problems, and we are coming from the survivor and coming from the people who have lived this. We make recommendations to the federal government. I've spoken in front of the federal government. It's one for the memoirs to sit up there and speak in front of there and in the White House, you know what I'm saying? So it's been a great experience for me. I wrote a book, it's out there. I've done a lot of things, and my life has been dedicated to human trafficking. They say sometimes, they said, there's two important days in your life, the day that you were born and the day you know why you were born. And I know why I was born. I was born to do this work. And if you're listening to everything we've all said today, please join us in the fight for human trafficking. I've experienced it, and it's horrendous. And she's experienced it, and it's horrendous. So that's why we fight so hard. We know you don't know how it feels. Help us fight human trafficking. If you can vote, if you can help us in any kind of way, please do. Because we don't have that type of support that we need. You haven't heard a candidate yet talk about human trafficking. Nobody is putting support behind this, but women are and boys and girls are dying every day. So please get behind us and help us.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much for being here today and sharing
your
experience.
And thank you for caring.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I think the first step is always to raise awareness. Mm-hmm. And my goal in hosting this is to give us a language to engage and also a focus of our engagement.
Thank you all for tuning into this episode of Trust Your Voice. We delved in deep into the issue of human trafficking and sexual exploitation. And I really hope you were inspired to engage. So, to recap, here are a few ideas. One, you can really educate yourself and others by diving into the Policy Circle brief on human trafficking, join the community, and really spark discussions about trafficking and sexual exploitation. Engage in dialogues that are going on the national, state, and local stages. The other thing you could do is demand accountability. You can engage with campaigns like we heard about, the Dirty Dozen list led by the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, to fight against Big Tech's role in sexual exploitation. And they also advocate for a safer online environment. And you know what's a great first step? Switch to FreeSpoke, which is a private porn-free search engine. The third thing you can do is advocate for effective legislation and help combat the full decriminalization of sex trade in states like Illinois, New York, Hawaii, Vermont, Massachusetts even. And you can support the equality model, also called the abolitionist model or partial decrim, which really targets exploiters while protecting victims. And then finally, you can support survivor initiatives you heard about. Get involved with organizations like Ernestine's Daughter, Join Brenda, or attend events like the RISE conference that is going to be held by Jessica Lamb with Atlanta Redemption Inc. And know that your involvement directly aids survivors, and it really fuels impactful outreach to save people out of exploitation. And finally, we gave our panelists beautiful, unstoppable candles that were created by Believe Statements. So I invite you all to shop with purpose and enjoy a 10% discount when you provide the code FREESPOKE at BeliefStatements.com. I want really to extend a heartfelt thank you to our guests for their bravery and commitment to fighting exploitation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for engaging with such an important issue. Be sure to subscribe to the Trust Your Voice podcast on your favorite platform and give us a 5-star, and most importantly, share it with friends. Remember, your voice matters, especially when you speak the truth. Value human dignity and go against the current. Never forget that.